Okay, clear number three engine.
Tower to C-54, end of runway. Okay for takeoff.
Engines 1, 2, 3, and 4, okay. Mixture controls, automatic rich.
Mix, your automatic rich.
Props, low pitch.
Props, low pitch.
Cowl flaps.
Cowl flaps, trail.
Big flaps, quarter.
Big flaps, takeoff. Shall we dance?
Yeah, I'll leave.
Takeoff time for Steve Canyon, colorful hero of Milton Caniff's exciting newspaper adventure strip. Brought to the air by Canyon's wartime flying buddy, the gallant leader of America's first flying commando unit in Burma, the original Flip Corkin himself, Colonel Philip G. Cochran.
This is Phil Cochran. You know, a guy doesn't bring many good things out of a war. But one good thing I was lucky enough to hang on to was the friendship of a lean, rangy rascal named Steve Canyon. When the powers that be stopped World War II, somehow they just plumb forgot to turn off old Steve. He's still out there, flying all over in a big surplus C-54. His destination? The nearest available dollar. And the dollars have been coming few and far between. Well, maybe he's not the world's best businessman, but he sure is a good correspondent. He loves to write. I get a letter from him every week. And this being another week, here's another letter. Postmark, August 27, Rangoon, Burma. It starts, Dear Phil, remember the first time you and I passed through here in 41 on our way up to join Wingate? Things got hot that night, too. But Flyboy, you should have been
in on this junket. We came down empty across the Bay of Bengal from Calcutta. Picked up the coast at dusk when that big Burmese sun was starting to sink below our left wingtip. We dropped the 1,500 feet as we swung in over the 6 miles of the Irrawaddy River. And just seeing it, I can remember the stench of those Oriental deltas. Believe it or not, one of my engines coughed a little. And I didn't blame it out there in that air. And the city was still the same, crowded and bustling with movement, most of it concerned with lugging some load on some back from some place to some other. I spent the first evening with my co-pilot, Breck Nazaire, in a joint called the Bloody Mary, and the natives went all out in giving us a rousing welcome.
This place looks about torn out.
Yeah. Kick a path to the door and let's get out of here before they start licking our hands.
Certainly.
And by the way, why did I have to pick a co-pilot like you? You get into more saloon fights than a bouncer. In Shanghai, Hong Kong, Singapore, Darwin, Penang. And now you're acting like the Robert E. Lee of Rangoon.
Now, Steve, so you cut that out. That's downright sacrilegious. Anyway, I was in here working.
Nice work.
But I was. I swear I was.
Uh-huh.
I was standing at the bar alone talking to a little old girl on my right, and this here other little old girl, she come up on my left and just tap me on the shoulder.
Uh-huh. So little old girls are chasing you for a change.
She were looking for you, son. She got a payload for Horizons Unlimited. Well, sir, we were talking just as nice as you could please, and some big, fat scoundrel, without any nose to his face at all, come up and started pushing around.
So you opened up, huh?
Well, certainly I did. I gave him a burst where that visa should have been, and then it turned out he brought some friends with him, and, well, bless you, old true-in-law. I certainly am glad you showed up.
Yeah. And what happened to Miss Payload of 1948? Did she fade out with your fat friend?
I wish I knew.
Well, he sure could have used that money.
Mm-mm. I sure could have used that honey.
Here we go again. Breck, you're the doggone... Breck.
Huh?
Hold it.
What?
Unidentified craft doorway, 2 o'clock.
Huh?
Why, looky.
Brick.
It's her, Stevie. Come in. Well, miss, it certainly is good to see you again. You, my dear, are about to preserve the honor of a son of the old South.
Please, get in here out of the light.
Well, this is cozy. Breck, I'm surprised at you. Big boys don't cuddle in hallways.
Quiet, you fool. Come in here, both of you. He's still following me.
Well, faint heart never won fair payload. Lead on. Ah, so this is the belle of the brawl. Breck, I think it'd be right nice if I got to meet the lady for whom my nose so recently was pummeled.
Why, sure. Steve Canyon, it does me proud to be able to introduce our new business associate, Miss Anna Bright.
Huh? Would you mind repeating that?
Anna Bright. What's the matter? Don't you like my name?
I liked it. And I liked the way she said it. I've never been so close to a woman I've known for so short a time. The hallway was that small. But don't get me wrong, Phil. I didn't mind. She had everything, that gal, and a white linen dress that pointed up. Even the moon was working for her. Came sneaking in through the grill work in the door, and you should have seen how her face lit up that moonbeam. And something else I always admire in a woman, Phil. She was pretty flip with her lip.
Mr. Canyon, if you can get your mind off what I think you've got it on, I'd like to talk business with you. I'm in trouble, and I'd like to cut you in.
Thanks a lot.
Listen. You have an airplane and I have a problem. I'll pay a lot of money.
Well, the lady says money.
That's the magic word. Where do we go and when do we start?
Shimbuyang tonight.
Shimbuyang? That's 1,000 miles.
That's my problem.
Shimbuyang? That is a problem. That strip is about the size of a doormat and it doesn't spell welcome.
That we can take care of. But one thing I gotta know. Is this deal legal?
It's legal. Have you heard of the ruby mines of Tally?
Yeah, I know where they are. It's your business, but... if you're interested in rubies, why don't you look up a nice, quiet credit jeweler?
Mr. Canyon, smart men don't make smart cracks.
Sorry.
Well, this is it. My father was the general manager of the Tally Mining Company before the war. He died in a Japanese concentration camp. He was tortured to death and burned.
Oh.
Because he wouldn't give up the thing he loved most, rubies. By the time he was captured by the Japanese, he'd collected a fortune in rubies. That's what they were after. But he died before he'd tell them where they were.
And, ma'am, you do know?
No, not yet. But there's a man in Shimbuyang waiting to tell me. He was my father's best friend, Robert Chandler.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Chandler buried my father's ashes at the entrance of the Tally Mine. I just received another letter from him telling me to come and get the rubies.
Well, that sounds simple enough.
Yes, it was. Until I went back to my hotel room after dinner tonight. My room had been torn to pieces and Robert Chandler's letter had been stolen. That's when I came looking for you.
Well, never let it be said that a canyon was found and found wanting. Breck, where's the crew?
Well, Mudder's probably somewhere playing the horses. Two-Way's probably somewhere playing the radio. And Rugg and the rest are certainly in that boarding house just playing.
Get them. Miss Bright and I will meet you at the ship.
Oh, Captain, my Captain, the assignments you do give me.
You in London cab. Finest ride in Rangoon.
Hey, can your horse make it to the airport?
Right, sir. And quick as a flash to boot. Mind the step, lady.
I will.
No matter what you say, the horse will never replace the airplane.
On your way now. Get up, sir.
Okay, Miss Bright. Let's talk.
Okay. I know who stole that letter.
Pardon me for asking, Governor. Are you one of them flying chaps? You've got the look about you, you have.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I wish I could pack this old blooming bundle in a flying machine and go breezing home to dear old London.
What's the matter? Don't you like it?
Like it? I hate it, I do. There I was, 20 years ago, minding my young business, and somebody has to go and give me a book of poems. Rudyard Kipling. I'd like to have him here right now. I'd Rudyard him, I would.
Yeah. Now, Miss Bright...
where the dawn comes up like thunder out of China... course, what bay? Come on, get up, Kipling. You and your blooming poem.
Now, Miss Bright, as you were saying, about that letter.
Well, I know who stole it. The same man who told the Japs about my father's rubies. The same man who helped them kill him. The same man you fought in the saloon tonight.
You mean the little
fat... yes, the little fat man with no nose.
Yeah, my nose would feel better if he had no muscle.
And now he's trying to keep me from getting the fortune that's rightfully mine.
Well, I'm a guy who thinks that every dame should have a fortune. Which reminds me, do you know how much a trip like this costs?
I don't care.
I'd better tell you. We've got a lot of engines and a lot of men. We charge $4 American per mile. That includes our flying, our feeding, and our fighting.
I said I don't care.
In advance.
I've got the money with me, if you don't mind traveler's checks.
Love them.
Fine. Now, can we please hurry?
What are we waiting for? Cabby, give it the gun.
What's that, Governor?
Keep him moving. Turn on more speed.
Speed, speed. Everybody who goes to the aerodrome wants speed. First it's that other fella, and now it's you. This ain't no blooming flying machine.
Did I hear you say other fella? What other fella?
Me last fare, just before I picked up you two. He was ugly little chap. Looked like a fat frog, he did. Here, you won't believe this. He didn't have a speck of a nose on his face.
When we hit the field, I went into what they called an operations office. They said they didn't know whether any plane had checked out for Shimbu Yang. So I didn't bother telling them that we were. You know what a lullaby that monotony sings to you when you're flying over 1,000 miles of peaceful, soggy jungle? But the way it worked out, Breck was doing the sleeping, I was doing the flying. We made Mishinaw and Dawn at about the same time, and an hour later we dropped over the hills that hide Shimbu Yang. I tipped the ship over in a gentle bank, cut back my power, and started to let down. I used my foot for an alarm clock, but it was the sight of that strip that really woke my ever-loving co-pilot.
Stevie! Holy mackerel, is this Shimbu Yang?
It ain't Columbus, Ohio.
Ouch, Daddy, that strip is smaller than my ex-wife's heart.
I hope it's softer in case we do pile up. Give me quarter flaps.
Quarter flaps? Stevie, sir, putting this size ship into that size runway would discourage a fit in a lady's shoe store.
Give me some wheels.
Wheels coming down.
Okay, I got a roller.
I got a roller. Nose wheel down.
Props, 2,500.
Y'all ready?
Yeah. Full flaps.
Stevie, don't you waste an inch. Look out, little strip. We're going to hit you right on your lip.
And we did it!
I hope we didn't scare the pants off our lady passenger. I'm going back to see if she needs any first aid.
All right. Pappy, I always say there's a better place for women than airplanes. Hope she didn't get too sick.
Good Lord, she fainted. Well, how do you like that? Hey, Sleeping Beauty, wake up. Watching those eyes open was like watching the morning sun snuggling its way out from under the covers of a bed of clouds when you're flying at 20,000. But when that gal woke up, she wasn't interested in romance. She was interested in rubies. I told the crew to break out the sidearms and the ladder. Phil, what would you think if you landed on a jungle strip and were not immediately surrounded by a swarm of natives? That's what we thought. So Breck and I left the crew to guard the ship. We knew something was wrong. We found out just how wrong when we walked through the door of Mr. Chandler's office at the Tally Mining Company. He was sitting at his desk, but he didn't give us a cordial greeting. He couldn't.
Oh. Oof. I wouldn't want to be alive and look that way.
Oh. What did they do to him?
It looks like they worked him over with a meat grinder.
The natives?
No, they do cleaner work. This man's been tortured. You know what that means.
It means somebody want to know something he knew, and they must have wanted it awful bad.
Steve, what am I going to do? This is the only man who could tell me where I can find my rubies. The only man who knew.
I'll interrupt your mourning for the late Mr. Chandler just long enough to tell you you're probably wrong. From the looks of things, I'd say, by now, somebody else knows.
This is Phil Cochran. We're about halfway through a letter from that rambunctious old rascal, Steve Canyon. You know, that boy hasn't changed a bit. With him, finding trouble is doing what comes naturally. So, naturally, this letter finds Steve in trouble.
So, Phil, to continue this little travel folder on the charms and beauty of Shimbuyang. There we were, sitting on the tag end of a 1,000-mile flight, looking a dead man and a lot of trouble square in the face. Outside in the hills, the natives were wailing. Inside, my nerve ends were doing the same thing. I took another look at Miss Honor Bright. Being in the same room with a fresh corpse didn't seem to throw her. She was cool as ice. And just for a moment, I thought what a pleasant job it would be trying to defrost her. Just about then, I got a chill all my own. A nice, cold gun muzzle right at the base of my neck.
Don't move.
Oh.
Don't worry.
Hey, what is this?
Silent! Stay right where you are. Now, three of you, move forward until you reach the desk. Quickly! Now, you may turn around.
You.
Well, as I live and breathe, if it isn't old no-nose.
Quiet, you swine.
Well, look at who's calling who a pig. I'd hate to leave you alone with a good full garbage can.
Breck. What do you want with us?
Miss Bright, unbuckle their gun belts. Let them drop to the floor.
What?
Move!
Is this what they call a disarming manner?
No. You ask me what I want. Miss Bright knows what I want from her. You will fly me out of here when I get it.
Oh? Well, if I'm a-going flying, let's go. Hey, Stevie, tight turn. May day. Check.
Loud and clear. Now listen, Miss Honor Bright.
Me? What have I done?
I'll show you what you've done.
Hey, stop! Stop, you two!
I know what you're up to, you...
No! Come on!
Breck said tight turn and May Day, it meant only two things to me. To give him some evasive action and stand by for a crash. Slapping a lady in the kisser was the most evasive action I could think of. But then, brother, did old Breck go crashing through that window. Our friend with no nose snapped a few shots after him, but that only made Breck go faster. I made a move to my gun, but Flat Face stopped that with a quick move from his.
Don't move!
Can't you think of anything else to say?
Steve Canyon, I'll pay you back for that, you... you brute!
Shut up!
You're in a rut, you know that?
Your friend thought he was smart, but he was stupid, Canyon. He might have caused me to kill you both.
Pretty boy. You need us, remember?
That is why you are still alive. Furthermore, your friend will do no shooting at me as long as I have you. Come, both of you, out of here.
Pretty Boy's 45 was directing the show. So we took our cue and trotted out like nice little people. I could hear one good reason why he wanted to pull a fast fade out. From the sound of their wails, I could tell the natives were coming down out of the hills. Unless 2 years of K-rationing around these parts was steering me wrong, those Nagas were on the Burmese version of a warpath. Some blood had been spilled, and they were out to mop up on the guy who spilled it. One look at Pretty Boy's face would have convinced any jury he was the guilty party. One listen to the oncoming Nagas convinced him they were on their way to get him. We ran across the clearing into one of the couple of native huts near the entrance of the Tally Mine.
No, Miss Bright. I have to get out of here quickly. So I make you a proposition. You want your rubies. I want your rubies. Neither one of us get them without the other.
Don't listen to this hoghead.
You stay out of this, you woman hater.
Save your talk. Keep your hands up. Well, Miss Bright...
What do you know that I don't know?
I know this.
Your rubies are buried in your father's ashes.
The rubies buried in my father's ashes? I don't believe it.
You believe Chandler? And I squeezed that much from his weak lips just before he died. Now, about what you know that I do not know. You know where your father is buried. Come now, we go, quickly.
Do you think I'd take you to where he's buried? To have you paw through his ashes?
I think you will if you do not want to die. I'm not going to wait long for you to make up your foolish mind.
You know what I think, pretty boy?
Shut up.
I think you'd better get your track shoes on. Take a look. Here they come.
Where?
Way over there, by that bulldozer. That nagger's swarming all over it. They'll be here in a minute.
What are we going to do?
We will be killed.
Listen, pretty boy. If you'll let me take my hands down and give me one of your guns, we may be able to scrape out of this. Our only chance is using crossfire. If you'll hold this hut, I'll do what I can about holding the one next door. You going to give me a gun?
You will shoot me.
I should, but we can't spare you right now. How about it?
But the rubies.
Are you out of your mind? Give him a gun.
All right. If I must, here.
Come on, Arnie, you're coming with me.
No, she's staying here.
Not while I've got a gun. Come on. No sooner Nod and I made the other hut than our well-planned defense fell to pieces. Converging crossfire may be all right when you're shooting it out with barefooted infantry, but we suddenly found ourselves up against an armored attack. Heading the column was that big D-4 surplus army bulldozer, lumbering across the clearing straight at our huts. I could see the blade coming up as they raised the shield of good Pennsylvania steel with which to play patty cake with our bullets. I told Honor to stand in close to me. I figured I might as well die warm.
I hope my shivering doesn't shake your aim.
Honey, shooting at that thing with this pop gun, it ain't going to make a bit of difference. Hey, put your head over here for a minute.
What are you going to do, slap me again?
Not exactly. There.
Well, this is a fine time to start that.
In about a half a second, it's going to be a fine time to start shooting. As they say in the Army, keep your shoulders down, kid. Oh, there goes Gun Happy. He couldn't hold his fire.
Oh, Steve, do you think we've got a chance?
What do you think? We've only got 7 bullets.
Oh.
No use wasting them on that dozer blade. If Pretty Boy Fire keeps him heading for his hut, maybe I can pop off that driver. Here he comes. A little more. There, he's almost cradled in my sights. Just a little more, and we'll rock him to sleep.
Steve, listen.
What is it? Stand back, baby. That's the southern arrangement of the battle cry of freedom. I greeted that ironclad jukebox with a 7-shot salute straight through the roof over my head. It seemed like that old bulldozer thanked me with a little more speed. She squared off and settled into her run. She went walking right into Pretty Boy's hut. And when she knocked on the door, she knocked it down, wall and all. When she went crunching through the front, old Pretty Boy went scrambling out the back.
There he goes!
See, the natives, they're after him.
After him. They got him.
Hey! Beavis, you all right?
Yeah, Brick.
Oh, wait a minute before he gets here. Put your head over here for a minute.
What do you want? Hey, what's the big idea?
Hey, that's a good idea.
Oh, Captain Canyon, you're wonderful. Thanks.
Well, how do you like that? I go to all the trouble of rounding up the crew, the natives, that bulldozer, and even playing my national anthem on the harmonica to rescue the lady. Who does she thank? The innocent bystander.
We gave her 20 minutes to go get her rubies. What she was going to do, I didn't want to watch. She was back in 15, and we didn't lose a second putting a mess of clean air between us and the shambles of Shimbuyang. I let Miss Honor Bright stand between Breck and me during the takeoff without benefit of seatbelt. Never having been an admirer of grave robbers, I figured if she sat down hard in a hurry, she could use a spanking.
Well, you should have subway straps up here, Captain.
Ha ha, very funny.
I might have hurt myself.
Not if the rest of you is as hard as your heart.
And just what do you mean by that?
I hope you didn't dirty your hands digging up your precious rubies.
I didn't.
I suppose you got them in a good safe place.
I have.
Where are they?
Where they belong, Captain Canyon. They're with my father. I didn't have the heart to go through with it.
Hey, wait a minute. I guess I had you wrong. Miss Bright, you may not know it, but you just pushed human nature's stock up about 20 points in my market. For a while there, I thought the soft spot in your heart was for nothing but rubies.
Thanks a million.
Oh! Stevie, the lady opened her mouth and you put your big fat foot right in her.
I was right. She blew up like a $4 firecracker.
Well, I reckon I'd be a mite jumpy, too, if I'd have come all the way out here to Shimbu Yang, spent all that money, then find myself going back empty-handed.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of it that way. You know, Breck, this money she paid us is probably just about all she had in the world. Without those rubies, she probably needs it.
Now, Stevie, if I was your business manager, I would right now stuff a great big hanky in your mouth.
You know, if we gave half of it back, we'd still break even.
Pappy, you're talking like a man who's in a hurry to go broke.
Here, take the ship. I'm going to see that poor kid and give her half her money back.
Oh.
Bright.
Oh.
I want to talk to you. Mind if I sit down?
No, I suppose not. Careful!
Oh, a darn near crash landed on this pretty little purse of yours.
Give me that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well. Miss Bright, I'd hate to get you wrong again.
Oh.
Of course, it may turn out that you're on your way to a marble tournament, and those things rolling around the floor are your pretty red aggies.
It's none of your business. Those rubies are mine. Now, what did you want to talk to me about?
Only this. Breck and I were figuring things out. We find we've made a mistake in the amount of money we charge you for this trip. You owe us another $1,000. I sure do pity the unlucky rube who winds up with that dame and her unlucky rubies. Oh, too bad she wasn't as soft as her curves. She took the next boat out of Rangoon for the States. We took a dull load of freight out to Hanoi. Truck tires and machinery. Not a kiss in a carload. We hit our checkpoint on the Salween River at 1000, set our engines at cruising RPM, and settled down for the long haul over the Thailand Hills. Hey, Breck, what are you doing there?
Oh, I'm riding in the log.
You must be writing a novel.
No, just entering our last payload.
What's it say?
You're going to love this one, Steve. It's one of my best. Quote. Once was a gal from Rangoon who we flew neath the old Burmese moon. I hoped for romancing, but we all wound up dancing a waltz with a no-nose baboon.
Unquote and out, Junior.
But we all wound up dancing a waltz with a no-nose baboon. And that'll give you an idea, Phil, of how things have calmed down in this theater of war since it became a theater of peace. I didn't make up a word of it. Honor bright. Pass this letter around to any of my friends you might bump into, and I'll be shooting you another one next week. As usual, Steve Canyon. Well, that's it. There's no telling what postmark next week's letter from Steve will be wearing. With that guy, it might be Karachi or Kansas City. One thing we do know, it'll be a half hour long. Rendezvous point for next week is this same time, this same station. Until then, this is Phil Cochran saying goodnight to you. And to Steve Canyon out there, wherever you are, long runways and happy landings.
CBS has presented Wendell Corey as Steve Canyon, colorful hero of Milton Caniff's exciting newspaper adventure strip, brought to the air by Canyon's wartime flying buddy, the gallant leader of America's first flying commando unit in Burma, Colonel Philip Flip Cochran. Tony Barrett plays Freck, music scored and conducted by Richard Arant. Steve Canyon is written and produced in radio color by Paul Dudley, Gil Dowd, and James Burton, with special effects and technical advice by the United States Air Force. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.